Thank you, Kristen. It's 6:30 after 5 o'clock, and it's time for Spectrum West. Welcome. On Friday the 13th, I'm Al Ross. Triskaidekaphobia, of course, the fear of the number 13. Parascavidiocatriaphobia is actually the fear of Friday the 13th, which is considered to be a day of bad luck in a number of Western cultures. But you know what? Friday the 13th is actually lucky for me, because I get to spend a meaningful hour with my favorite people. That's you. And this Friday the 13th is an especially fortunate one here on Spectrum West. We have Larry Mueller in the house. We're going to get to know him a bit better, so we're prepared when he joins us for this year's WPR Listener's Dinner coming up on the 26th. Jim Oliver welcomes Paul Kallenberg today. He's directing the UW Stout production of Cabaret, the musical, opening tonight at the new Harvey Hall Theater. By the way, this is Steep Canyon Rangers playing in the background. Tomorrow night, State Theater, Eau Claire, 7:30. Nick Myers here. He's the founder and continues as editor and publisher of Volume 1. They're celebrating 10 years. Let's get this show on the road with a phone call to Thomas Lindfors. He's a photographer working out of Star Prairie, Wisconsin, on the roster of member artists involved with the Art Z Gallery. That's in Amory. And we began our conversation with a definition, as in when it all began.
The initial founding, I guess, fathers of this, I would say, were Karen and Charlie Nielsen out of Balsam Lake. I think the thing that got this off the ground was that, first of all, Karen and Charlie brought a lot of determination to it, but then Charlie is a custom carpenter, and he brought also the ability to make the physical space a reality. So,
oh, okay.
I think that was a huge part of how this got started, and they were, you know, the cooperative artist idea is not unique. It's been out there in a lot of different forms for a while, and to an operation like that, the key is having a core group of people that are have enough business experience to make it work, and that was the case.
Is it tough to run something like that has so many members politically? Because it literally is a co-op. You have not only members, but you also then have guest artists. You would think that everyone, because they enjoy what they're doing and want as much publicity as possible, would be clamoring for
it. It is a democracy, so it has its interesting moments, and it's, you know, as any collaborative effort like that, there are certainly personalities involved, and add art to that, and there's lots of personalities. But again, I think it's fortunate formula here. They had enough core people involved early on that had the business experience and the ability to sort of stay stable, that they were able to get enough things in place to get the business up and running, and now sort of really beyond nurture it, now it's a matter of promoting it. Good people, talented artists, a lot of talented artists, and in various stages of their careers, so yeah, that might be one of the good things too. So I'm going to say there was probably 12 artists initially who signed on as members, and I think with not unfounded skepticism, a lot of artists that, you know, might have been members initially sat back and waited to see if this thing would, you know, hold together.
Mm-hmm.
And it did, and I think that's, you know, a tribute to the leadership, but also to a fact that, you know, a lot of those artists were able to set their egos aside and, you know, figure out that the overall benefit was greater.
Mm-hmm. Joining us on Spectrum West is Tom Lindfors. He's a photographer, and our subject at hand is the Art Z Gallery, which is a cooperative of many artists within that area, and it's located physically in Amory. It is a physical plant, yes?
It is, yep. It's about, about a 3,000-square-foot space.
Okay. I don't know that we touched on, and it's a short answer, but we touched on the history and how it got started, but how long ago was that?
It officially opened its doors, I want to say it was July of 2010.
Oh, so it's relatively new then.
Yeah, it was a 3-month ramp-up period with sort of the construction being handled by the members themselves. And then, so this July would be about 2 years.
And it's kind of cool that everybody has that central location, but I'm guessing that like most artists who live, you know, in the boonies and in artistic neighborhoods, everybody has their own studio that's visitable, huh?
Yeah, I think they do. I think, you know, again, going back to the Earth Arts Tour, they have their spring tour, and you know, chances are you would see some of the artist's studio in that case, or sometimes they, you know, bunch up in areas. But, yeah, most people have their own space. But this, you know, this is I'm sure that it was designed mostly as a, you know, a display space and access to sell retail art, but they have a large section in the back of the actual space which is kind of dedicated to classes and so forth, the kinds of things, so there's hands-on art going on.
Yeah.
They've got some other opportunities. They actually just initiated a relationship with the Osceola Medical Center where we're going to facilitate a gallery space in the hospital.
Well, since you're the guy with whom we're talking today, you have the privilege of being able to tell us specifically about what it is you do. Tell us about your photography.
I fell in love with photography while I was in college. Had my grandma's camera, took it over to Europe with me while I was in school, and that shoved law school out the window, and I just fell in love with it right there. So it was a matter of, you know, paying off student loans and so forth until I could get back into photography, and I did, and that was probably 30 years ago.
How about your photography? Do you specialize in certain procedures, subjects?
Yep. I would say the bulk of my work, my time in Chicago, was corporate photography. So I worked on a lot of annual reports, that kind of thing. I do a lot of people photography. So in that case, it was, you know, CEOs, boards of directors, a lot of real people kinds of things, but I've also done a fair bit of advertising, so
okay.
Casting and stuff for, you know, clients like Quaker Oats. Now I do a lot of work for universities and foundations.
Ah, and it's artistic in nature.
It is. It's, I enjoy working, I'll say, you know, in photography it's called real people as opposed to models, but photography is a great, and really it's a great excuse to meet people.
Yeah, and it's a whole other interview for us to talk about what digital photography's meant to photographers.
Probably viewed very skeptically initially and moved into reluctantly, but fully embraced now and an amazing tool for teaching and learning.
Yeah, no kidding. Tell us what's going on in April at Artsy Gallery.
In April, they're featuring the four artists. The member artists this month are Earl Duckett. He's a nature photographer out of Osceola. The other member photographer is Emily Kohler. She's a printmaker out of White Bear Lake, Minnesota. The guest artists this month are, I don't know if they're both earth artists, but I know David DeMathia is one of the, he's an earth artist, and he's a very interesting, unique fellow. I will say for this particular exhibit, it's metal work.
Okay.
And then we have a jeweler this month, Jane Nicole. I think she's out of Hudson. Interesting metal work, you know, sort of textured metal work with interesting jewels. Very nice work, all of them. Earl, Earl was one of the founding members of Artsy, and outstanding nature work. Everybody has a website, and if you go on the Artsy website, you can see samples of their work, and you can hook up directly to their websites.
I was just going to bring that up because it's a wonderful resource. You do have a very nice website.
You know, it's one of those things I think that's a necessity these days, particularly in the art world. If you're going to keep people connected, it's almost like you were mentioning before, the fact that everybody has their own studio and their own little world, but, you know, the access through the Internet is fabulous these days, so got to have it.
How can, let's say, an artist is listening to this and wants to be considered? How does that happen?
You actually, through the website, you can download the applications that are required for a guest artist, and it has all the requirements on there. It's not complicated. You really, what you need to do is have samples of your work available. It could, you know, it can be traditional slides, or it could be a website, or if you've got digital files, you need to have some sort of representation of your work, and then you need some sort of resume, you know, some sort of artist statement, something that shows you have a history as a working artist.
Right.
And you need to get that over to the gallery. You can drop it off pretty much any day.
Okay. Great. Tom Linfors, photographer, thanks for filling us in. I'm happy that I finally got all the information I need about Artsy, and we'll keep in touch.
You're welcome. I appreciate the opportunity.
The website address is artzgallery.org. If you're in the Amory area, stop in, and I do believe we'll be talking about one or two spring art tours in coming weeks. 16 minutes after 5 o'clock, here's a Spectrum memo. There will be readings in the Janet Carson Gallery at the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center by English professor Max Garland Thursday the 19th at 5 p.m. Remember, the gallery and box office are open until 7 o'clock each Thursday evening now.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Wisconsin Credit Union, offering online and phone loan applications for student loans, consolidation, vehicles, a line of credit, and more. Information online at wisconsincu.org.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you very much. Volume 1 is a magazine. Volume 1 is a website. Volume 1 is a voice that says this is a cool place to live. There's a lot to do, and talented people are waiting to make life interesting. We're going to introduce you to them, tell you where to find them, and we're going to come up with our own events and outlets that enhance all that good life. Here at Spectrum West, we recognized Volume 1 is taking note of its first 10 years with a special edition and plans for even more exciting involvement in our lives. Mr. Nick Meyer, founder, publisher, editor, was there at the beginning. That was in his early 20s. I don't want to know everything you dreamed about when you were 23, because sometimes 23-year-old dreams are wacky, but tell me what the, what were you dreaming about when you were 23? Because that's when you started this whole...
Yeah. I mean, well, I was 22 when we first started talking about it, about 6 months or so before the first issue came out. But we didn't dream about anything. That was the thing. We thought there was some things that weren't happening or that weren't getting covered, that weren't getting the attention that they needed. And we knew a few people who had talent, and we just thought we'd pull them together and do a thing. And that thing didn't have a huge sprawl out vision, but shortly on the heels of putting that first thing out there, I mean, we started to push and to think of things that we could do that actually did this. The dreams came later, okay. I think. At first, it was just let's try something. Let's do this for the heck of it and see where it goes. And it went somewhere.
Because I read the old Nothing to Lose, which probably in that stage of your life was true.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I was a couple months away from moving to the cities, like so many people before me, you know, or somewhere else. And looking either whether it was going to be for more education or just other exciting opportunities. I mean, I was almost out the door of this community, and we started that thing. And so I thought, well, we'll ride this out for a little while, see where it goes, and then maybe I'll leave. And then slowly, the more you work on a community and realize everything that's there, the less you want to leave. And pretty soon that became our mission, to try to help other people to make those decisions to not leave as well or to even arrive. And so here we are.
Do you remember where it was that you suddenly realized I've got something here and it's more serious than I thought it was going to be?
Wow, that's interesting. I think that happens at several points. Every time you get to a next level, you think, wow, you know, we got something here. And then it kind of happens again, and pretty soon you're in so deep that you can't get out. But I think with the magazine, that first happened really kind of early. I mean, people took a lot of interest in it. You know, we had also heard that a lot of people had done similar things like this before, and some people were kind of sitting on their hands and waiting to see if this would become something. The magazine that took hold early with our events and things like that, I think the first time was with the very first concert series that we produced in Phoenix Park on the Thursday nights down by the river. And I had filled out the form with the Parks and Rec Department, you know, saying, how many people do you expect to come to this thing when you're getting your permit? And I said, you know, I don't know, like 30, 40, 50 people maybe would come. Yep. And right away that first one, which was in May actually, and it was cold, there was about 200 people there almost right away out of the gate. And so that was kind of, oh, we're on to something. And then we were just going to do it for a few weeks and then let other people take it from there. But the people were just asking for more and wanting us to continue it. And so that's when that became apparent. And a lot of the event stuff came since then. And so there's a lot of points where you realize that hey, maybe you're onto something. And those are exciting moments. And I think that's something that I kind of became addicted to over the years, was that sensation of, hey, this is working. This could be something. And you want to kind of keep looking for that next fix, I guess, so to speak, that entrepreneurial fix, but also that cultural and community fix.
Mm-hmm. The guy who's with us talking about their 10-year anniversary is the founder, publisher, editor, Nick Meyer of Volume 1, and of course all of the social network implications that are tied to Volume 1, which we haven't gone into, the internet site and
sure,
all the other stuff. After these 10 years, you have a lot of neat plans, a lot of exciting stuff going on, including a move.
This is something that's been in the works for a while. We're moving into a building just a few blocks away from where we are now that really will solve a lot of internal problems for us, but also create a lot of external opportunities and things for the community to do. This June, we'll be moving our whole store, our whole office to this new location, which will just give us a lot more space to do a lot of the ideas and the things that we have. There'll be some events related to the store, in-store events, author readings, music release parties, film screenings, things like that. And we also hope to stream those live online and keep them archived and things as well on volume1.org. But the other things that are interesting is we're starting a co-working space, which is something for creative freelancers like designers or consultants or, you know, computer programmers and things like that who work mostly out of their homes or out of various cafes and things, to have an actual space to do what they do and to be around other people and not be, you know, stuck in their living rooms or their bedrooms. That's going to be called Workspace, and you can read all about that at volume1.org/workspace. We're excited about that because it's going to give creatives a whole other opportunity for doing what they do in this community and having some support for that. Mm-hmm. So that's another piece of it. There's just a lot of different things that we're going to be making happen in that space over the next several months.
One unique factor about life in Wisconsin is that very seldom here in the state does the right hand know what the left hand is doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I used to live on the eastern side of the state, and over there, they don't have a clue what's going on the western side, and vice versa. Even though some artists have turned the spotlight onto Eau Claire and West Wisconsin at times, there are still a bunch of best-kept secrets, even with folks like Volume 1 shouting from the hilltops. Is it important for us to broadcast our abilities to entertain and create, or is it okay for us to just continue to entertain ourselves?
Well, that's a fascinating question. I think I come from a place that says that you must broadcast those things. But the question of why must you broadcast them, I suppose, is really fascinating. I mean, we are here. We should just be here to entertain ourselves and to keep ourselves culturally engaged and enriched. And it's not about getting all that attention and everything. And now, it's funny, for so long, people in the arts and entertainment community here, you know, clamored for that attention and wanted that attention beyond just letting the southern or the eastern half of the state know what we're doing. But the world, and now we've got that from a few different handful of artists, different people in different disciplines that you could list. And now it's kind of like, well, maybe we don't need that. You know, we've got it now. And It is about just kind of cultivating ourselves, I think, in a lot of ways, and making sure that we're all happy with what we have here and not feeling like we're missing out on something. So as long as that need is fulfilled for our citizens, I think we'd be okay whether people outside of this community know about it or not.
And yet, you know, the frustration of people who are involved in certain aspects of art and music and entertainment, they wonder why more people don't show up. That's the catch-22 of what we are over here. It's the where do we go when we get too much? Because on any given weekend, there are a lot of things to do. Right. And for the discretionary dollar and for someone's time, we can only divvy up so much time to do all that's available for us to do.
Yeah, and I would say if there's a goal to be had now, it would be less to, you know, to get that attention from the outside and more to have more local people. Mm-hmm. Bring that attention and fill those seats more often and get people out to those events and to those shows. But you're right. I mean, there is, and I'm, you know, discovering that now as well. I mean, just personally, you know, now having our, you know, my wife and I had our first child just 4 months ago and things change and you don't have as much time, and I can understand how, yeah, they do, man. Of course. But it's hard to make time for all that stuff. And that's the thing. I mean, I think when we first started, it wasn't that there was too many things happening. There were definitely things happening, but now 10 years later, I mean, there are almost too many things happening. I mean, it's just crazy. And so, but we got to just get people that want to support those things and get out there so those things can continue to happen and the best of them will survive and we'll keep growing, changing and evolving. You know, it's one thing to get those things happening to start. I mean, I think in some ways, in my mind, that's almost easier to get something started and happening and have that first enthusiasm. But it's that long-term, you know, economic viability, cultural viability to keep it going. And that's the big challenge, I think, to make sure. I mean, if we are attracting people from wherever, how do we make that work on a long-term basis and keep it sustainable?
I know it's a natural curiosity to ask, what's next? Where you are now, does that place allow you to look 10 years ahead when you weren't looking 10 years ahead 10 years ago?
Whoa, I think you just blew my mind. You mean our new building? Will that?
No, I mean,
just where we are?
So you're into it now. This is not an experiment anymore.
No,
you are
clearly
able to look. You are able to look ahead 10 years and say, I have goals, or we have goals, and this is where.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and I think we have. I mean, the main thing is just to not lose what we already have. I mean, you know, a lot of organizations, I think, are similar to this, can can kind of mature to a point where they lose focus or they lose sight of what they're supposed to be doing. So we've also this year, we do want to take a really good, hard, long look at what we have done and what we are doing and what we want to do and determine, recenter ourselves basically and say what, you know, what's going to be important for the next 10 years for us. Because we've grown and done a lot of different things with the events and the store and the website and the magazine and all these extra things. You know, do we want to keep all that stuff going, or do we want to add to it, or do we want to change some, and how can we best serve you know, the community that we all live in and that we want to grow and see evolve. So while there aren't specific plans for the next 10 years, there are definitely a lot of thoughts that you want to grab hold of and pull down and determine whether they are worth it or not.
You do encourage people to contact you because it's the people out there who make you what you are.
Yeah, we do want to hear from people. And it, you know, through our website is a great way to do that. We will be doing some more formal things for that this year as far as trying to get input from the community. And a lot of people look to us, you know, too. They try to give input to the city through us because they kind of see us as kind of a gateway to that. Is there anything we can do even further to kind of create partnerships with, you know, economic development organizations and the city and different things like that to help those dialogues take place.
And they have become master of dialogue. We congratulate the People and Ideas of Volume 1 and look forward to working with them and following their success into another decade. This is Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio, 27 and a half minutes after 5. How's your April, Friday the 13th going?
Here's what's on stage this weekend and beyond at Western Wisconsin theater venues. The University of Wisconsin Stout will perform the musical Cabaret tonight and Saturday and next Thursday through Saturday at the Harvey Hall Theater on the University campus in Menominee. Richard III, a production of the theater department of the University of Wisconsin River Falls, will open next Thursday at the Blanche Davis Theater of the Kleinpel Fine Arts Building on the University campus in River Falls. The Eau Claire Children's Theater production of Dora the Explorer will play tonight, Saturday, and Sunday, and the following Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Oxford Theater in Eau Claire. Now, many of the performances are sold out, so check with the Children's Theater box office for ticket availability. Fox on the Fairway will play tonight and Saturday and selected weekdays and Sundays at the Fanny Hill Dinner Theater. The show will run through July 1st. Oli's Dead, Lena's Dating will play tonight and Saturday and on the following Friday and Saturday at the Space Center for Creativity in New Richmond. The Menominee Theater Guild's Red Cedar Youth Stage will perform Pinocchio tonight and Saturday at the Mabel Tainter Theater in Menominee. The Family and Youth Theater at the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls will perform Alice in Wonderland next Thursday, Friday, and Sunday. The show runs through April 29th. The Miracle Worker, a play based on the life of Helen Keller, ends its run tonight, Saturday and Sunday, at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. Righteous, the story of the Righteous Brothers, plays tonight and Saturday at the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson. The musical runs through May 12th. And that's some of what's happening in theaters around the region. I'm Jim Oliver.
And that same guy will be back in just a few minutes with news of what's playing at UW Stout. It's 5:30. This is Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. We appreciate you being here. The artist series at UW Eau Claire is a pretty big deal. Next Wednesday, the 18th, if you drive by Zorn Arena, I do believe you're going to see it swaying and shimmying. So why drive by? Go inside for Viver Brasil, an inspiring, noisy, rhythmic, and colorful journey through Brazil. I spent a few quality phone minutes with the originator and artistic director, Linda Udin. I was wondering where her link to Brazil comes from, and I found out she spends a lot of time there.
The link is Salvador Bahia itself, this grand city, which is the third largest city in Brazil, where the African presence is very strongly felt in the dances, the music, the songs, the rhythms, the clothes, the customs, and that's what that's actually what brought me to Brazil, was all of this incredible dancing that I first experienced at UCLA when I was a graduate student getting my master's degree in dance ethnology. I took this very incredible course called Dance in Latin America, and during that quarter, a folkloric group from Salvador Bahia came to Los Angeles to promote tourism. It was in the middle 80s when there was a real push to bring, you know, the tourist dollar to northeastern Brazil and especially to Salvador Bahia. So Bahia Torso, which is the state tourist agency, was doing a lot of traveling around the world. And they happened to choose Los Angeles as one of its sites to promote Afro-Brazilian culture. And so this company came to UCLA to do a performance, and I was just taken. It took me, that cultural journey that they presented to us on stage, took me 3 months later to Salvador Bahia, and here I am 26 years later presenting my own company, you know, on stages nationally and internationally. So I feel very proud and very humbled at the same time that, you know, that particular company inspired me to go south and do all of this dance research and work that I've been doing over the past 2.5 decades.
You know, it does seem that Brazil has a tendency to lure us in. Do you think that goes back to the bossa nova craze?
Oh, I'm sure that it does. I'm sure that that's really the truth. One professor said years ago when I called him to say, I'm going to Brazil and I need to talk with you and so forth and so on. He goes, you got the bug and you will never be cured of this, you know, sort of metaphoric bite that you just received.
Yeah.
So I think it has a lot to do with it. You know, it's a grand cultural diversity. I mean, they call it a mix, but I think that it's really this incredible diversity between the indigenous and the African and, you know, the Portuguese cultures really made this very incredible fusion. And we all are very, or those of us that are Brazilophiles are very attracted,
yeah,
you know, to this very incredible mix. And I think also, too, you know, the heat certainly does help. But I think that, you know, certainly for me, you know, the African presence, and you can see it in Bossa Nova, too, is very important.
Tell us what those in the audience will experience at a Viver Brasil performance.
Non-stop Afro-Brazilian dance, music, song, beautiful vocals, emphasis on the rich ceremonial dances and music in the first half of our show, and then the second half we explode with an Afro-Brazilian contemporary piece, and then we hit for an incredible mix of samba and capoeira, which is an Afro-Brazilian martial art dance, all of our incredible interest in samba and capoeira, and also the other dance forms the dancers bring to their training, like ballet, like West African dance, and then we end with a heated-up carnival piece which celebrates the rhythms of samba reggae and samba afro, which are really marked by in carnival.
Mm-hmm. You travel with a big troupe, do you?
We're 14 on stage, and we're all together, 18 of us.
What's the music accompaniment like?
Percussion, lots of different kinds of drums from Brazil, as well as flutes and saxophone, our saxophonist percussionist, flautist, even plays a bottle.
Plays a bottle. There you go. Viver Brasil. It all begins Zorn Arena, UW Eau Claire campus, Wednesday evening at 7:30. Tickets available at the Service Center, which is Davies Center East Lobby. And at the door, you could call as well, 715-836-3727. Spectrum West is the name of the program you have on your radio. Thanks for doing that. The time is 5:34. Cabaret is a classic. And so is the guy we have covering it. Here's Jim Oliver with his front row seat for something theatrical going on.
Cabaret, a musical by John Kander and Fred Ebb, with a story based on a 1939 novel by Christopher Isherwood, opens tonight at the Harvey Hall Theater on the campus of the University of Wisconsin-Stout in Menominee. The play is directed and choreographed by Paul Kahlenberg, theater director at the university. Paul Kahlenberg joins us to talk about Cabaret. Welcome to Spectrum West.
Thank you.
So, to begin with, let's talk about what the show's about.
Well, Cabaret tells the story of life in Berlin, Germany in the 1930s, at the dawn of the rise of the Third Reich. And it explores the characters that live in Germany and their lifestyle, which for these characters were very much of a party and play lifestyle, pretty much of an apathetic society, and how this apathy in terms of not being involved in politics and free lifestyle, how it really opened the way for Hitler to rise to power and to take over Germany and the disastrous situations that that followed. So it specifically explores the character of Sally Bowles, who is a nightclub singer who performs in a very seedy nightclub where anything and everything does go in terms of the party lifestyle, in terms of the sexual energy that was prevalent during the time period in terms of these underground nightclubs. And her story evolves, and her relationship with the lead character, Cliff, and the other characters spins around this rise of the Nazi regime and the lifestyle that helped nurture its coming into being.
Tell us a little bit about the music that we'll expect to hear in the show.
Well, music is by Kander and Ebb, who also gave us the music for the hit musical Chicago. And there's a wide variety of musical styles in the play. A lot of the songs are performance songs that take place in the Kit Kat Club. So there's a lot of high energy and dance and once again, very sexual driving force in a lot of the numbers. There are also some sentimental types of songs between the characters of Herr Schultz and Fräulein Schneider, who are a romantic couple. And so you get some sentimentality and also some really heart-wrenching dramatic numbers where the characters really purge their emotions. And so there's a lot of variety, which I think really helped keep the rhythm of the show moving along and keeps the audience very interested, because you never know exactly what's going to be coming next in terms of the music or the staging of the individual songs.
Now, Cabaret opened on Broadway in 1966, and there have been a number of revivals, with a 1993 London revival being notable for changes in the show. How has that affected the UW-style production?
Well, we're going very much with the 93 London revival, and then taking a lot of the interpretation and further changes that the 1997 Broadway revival incorporated, which starred Alan Cummings and Natasha Richardson. And what they did is they went back and really take the show back to a more historically accurate depiction of life in Germany and life in cabaret in terms of these underground types of cabaret scenes that were going on. So it's a lot more gritty. It's a lot takes the anti-Semitic and the persecution of the Jews and the homosexual community and brings that more to the forefront of the production. So it's more gritty. It's a lot more has a lot more sexual energy and drive to it, and becomes a much more disturbing and thought-provoking production, especially towards the end of the play when Act Two really takes a very dark turn, as opposed to Act One, which has a lot of the more exciting numbers and the upbeat free lifestyle and that was evident at the time.
Now, this is for mature audiences. To what extent is this PG-13, or how will it affect younger audience members?
I always have trouble trying to put that into perspective for other individuals. I think a person needs to, if they're concerned about it, I think, do a little bit of research, Google it a little bit. I would say it's PG maybe 13. I would be comfortable bringing anyone, certainly from 7th, 8th grade up. I think it would be appropriate. It is mature content, but I think that the PG-13 is probably a pretty good gauge.
Okay. He is Paul Kallenberg, director of the University of Wisconsin Stout production of Cabaret. Well, you've sort of alluded to all this, what makes it an educational experience for college theater students. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Well, it gives a really good historical perspective that we don't always get in terms of the 1930s Germany and the rise of the Third Reich. We get a lot of textbook information and academic information, and this really personalizes it and humanizes it, because we can see how it affects real people. So it's a really human interest content, because we see characters being affected by it. We're not just reading about it in a textbook. So it gives us a real good way of emoting and getting an empathy for the situation at hand. So it's a good historical perspective, and also in terms of exploring the impact that musical theater can have, because it's a very dramatic musical. A lot of times people think musicals as romantic fluff, and it's a real good medium for this type of story to be told and the musical theater aspect of it really heightens the dramatic intensity.
Now, you're listed as the director and choreographer, so how much are the students involved in the production, aside from being actors, of course?
We have a cast of 16. We've had a backstage crew that is at the performance each night and helps with makeup and dressers and props crew. We have approximately probably 12 that work backstage. And we've had approximately 30 students who help out in terms of scenic construction, costume construction, lighting areas. So, you know, all told, when you add up everybody, you know, we're looking around 75 to, you know, 100 students possibly working on the show and contributing to the final product.
Who's the musical director?
Musical director is Michaela Stewart.
Now, Harvey Hall Theater reopened last year after extensive renovations, mm-hmm. and we haven't talked since that happened. So talk about the impact the new theater facilities has on the program.
Well, it, like you said, it just went through a renovation last year, a $5.6 million renovation. So it was really a complete makeover in terms of the backstage areas and the audience as well. So we've got improved seating, improved sight lines, all brand new equipment, so it's really been able to we've been able to enhance our performance aesthetic in terms of the technical areas, and really increase the theater going experience for our audience with the new seating, which is all expanded and a lot more room and more comfort, and the whole aesthetic of the whole interior of the theater is very much reminiscent of an old Broadway house. So it's very quaint, and that really lends itself well to the production of Cabaret, because the audience needs to feel like they're part of the Cabaret when we're in the club, and we've been able to incorporate architectural detail from the theater renovation into the set itself. And so it feels like the set is just part of the theater, and the audience is part of the set.
Well, we've been visiting with Paul Kallenberg, director of the University of Wisconsin-Stout production of Cabaret. The show opens tonight at the Harvey Hall Theater on the university campus in Menominee. The show continues on Saturday and next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. For tickets, go online at tickets.uwstout.edu or call 715-232-1431. Paul Kallenberg, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Support for WPR comes from Just Local Food, your friendly downtown grocery store where the coolers are stocked with a variety of regional cheeses and beer. In Eau Claire at the corner of South Farwell and Washington, and at justlocalfood.com.
Yes, ma'am. Thanks so much. Spectrum West, that's us. Thanks for being here, folks. Time is 5:43, almost 44. Now, you know what? Larry Mueller is as much a fixture of midday in Wisconsin as the noon siren in a small town and the conversation at lunch tables around which people sit and talk. Larry Mueller has long coattails. Just ask folks like Sandy Tsachuk, Scott Craven, and Phil Pelletieri. They have household names because Larry brings them into so many households. Larry's coming soon to have dinner with us all. And we'll get to those details shortly. But first, allow me to introduce you. I'm wondering how it feels to be the guy who needs no introduction. You are the guy with whom we have lunch every day, and we never get tired of your company, Larry.
Well, it's a lot of fun to be in this position, mm-hmm. and I am often stopped especially if people hear me laugh. I'm telling you, I was at a car wash not too long ago, and I went through the line. I was talking to the person, took my money, and we talked for a minute. And there was a woman behind me, and she came up to me afterwards, and she said, "Did anybody ever tell you you sound just like Larry Mueller?" Well,
okay.
I am Larry Mueller. She said, "Oh my goodness!"
Wow. I'm willing.
You know,
to
when
bet.
You're on the air for this long.
And how long is it?
Oh boy, I was in college when I started, so that would have been 1967 was the first time I was on the air.
Wow.
At Wisconsin Public Radio.
Wow.
That's a long time ago.
And I'm willing to bet that if I went up to 10 people on the street in 10 different Wisconsin towns and asked, "Who is Larry Mueller?" most would have some sort of an answer rather than, "I never heard of him." So let's talk about where all that distinction comes from, if we could. And you said you were in college. Take me back to your earliest days on the radio. And was that a natural thing for you to do, or were you coaxed into doing it, or how did you get on the air?
Well, it's actually pretty interesting. I took a class in radio from a guy by the name of Maury White.
Okay.
Maury was the farm reporter for WHA Radio, and he was a professor in agricultural journalism. I took his radio class, and he was leaving for Colorado for the summer and didn't have anybody to do his half-hour show. So he asked, I guess he liked what he heard from me, so he asked me if I would be interested in going on for a master's degree. And I didn't have any job prospects, so I said, well, yeah, I might be, you know, be interested. So I did that, and about the time I was finishing that master's degree, he got promoted to a deanship. And so then they kept me on for another year or so until they could find somebody with a Ph.D., to kind of fill in that position, because it was also teaching and other things, you know, parts of it. Finally, they said, you know what, you're doing okay, so why don't you just stay here? Get your Ph.D., and then we'll keep you. Wow. So that's what happened. I didn't have any job prospects then either. Still don't. Oh, boy. Yeah, so I started, we did a half-hour show for a long time, and then it morphed into an hour show, and I hosted it with different people over the years, co-hosted it. Mm-hmm. And then it turned into a 90-minute show, and I'm trying to think about 1985, I think, thereabouts, a call-in talk show. Well, I'm sure I had the first call-in talk show on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Well, you know, this may seem like a weird comparison, but Thomas Kincaid's been in the news lately, sadly, because he passed away. But his artwork is said to make people feel better. I heard that just the other day.
Mm.
And I think, I do, that we can attach that same feeling to hearing Larry Mueller's voice. You know, I think it's happened to me before. One could be having a very bad morning, turn on the radio, there's Larry. Things aren't really that bad. You know, so I'm wondering, what does that for you? What makes Larry Mueller happy and content?
Well, I'm really happy doing this show. I mean, I hope that sounds...
We can tell.
People hear that, because it's so much fun to talk to interesting people every day about interesting topics. So, and I'm here at the station for a couple hours a day. And prior to coming over, I'm working with students.
Mm-hmm.
I teach a couple classes. And so I sort of get away from that office and get to come over here and sit down and talk with interesting people about interesting topics. That really is a lot of fun. I learn a lot. I always say I'm pretty good at cocktail parties. I know a little bit about a lot of topics.
Yeah, I'll bet your people come to you for...
I'm asked pretty often. I'm asked questions when people meet me, especially in the gardening area or animal behavior area. Those kinds of areas, people will often come to me and say, you know, I've got this dog that doesn't mind or whatever.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll try to answer, but I know my limits, believe me, and I always know who to contact.
Sure.
Who really knows the answers. So.
Well, somewhere along the line, you've probably heard the answer to most of those questions. So
Yes, as a matter of fact. And there are times it's kind of fun. Sometimes I'll have a guest on who I've had on before, and they're answering a question, and they left out a part that I heard them say before. And so I'll say, you know, I heard you say before. And they'll say, oh, yeah, thanks. I forgot about that. so they'll bring it up then.
Yeah. You brought up the educational factor in your life. Tell me about because I read this and I was thinking life sciences, communication. Tell me about that combination, life sciences and communication.
Yeah, our department was originally agricultural journalism.
Okay.
And we over time, you know, added faculty and so forth and got the interest broadened to not only be agriculture, but to be health, for example, medicine. We did a lot of health related kinds of things. So as we applied for research dollars and so forth, we needed a new name for the department that more accurately reflected the kinds of research and teaching that we did. So the name changed from agricultural journalism to life sciences communication.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of that's been a good change. I mean, when you're applying, you know, we have a $2 million grant from the National Institutes of Health. It's easier to explain yourself if you are a Department of Life Sciences communication why you're applying for health communications research. So
farmers can today call themselves life scientists?
They can. They should.
They should.
If they don't,
I would.
I mean, they're I'm telling you, they are. Talk about a profession that's a jack of all trades.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, they have to be. They have to be veterinarians. They have to be mechanics. They have to know. They have to understand the most plant nutrition, the animal nutrition, obviously. So they amaze me, to be honest.
And me. Well, we're talking with, here on Spectrum West, Larry Mueller. And usually when I identify in the middle of a conversation a guest, I explain and remind you who they are and what they do. If I have to do that for Larry Mueller, you call me because there's something wrong with your life. Well, Larry, tell me about the friendship you've developed with Wisconsin Public Radio, because it's a very important medium, isn't it?
Oh, it's a wonderful medium, isn't it? I feel so blessed to have been a part of Wisconsin Public Radio for a lot of reasons. But I mean, the folks here, the people here that I've had a chance to work with, have been just wonderful people, going all the way back to the beginning. When I first came, here's another little story. When I first came here, Carl Schmidt was station manager. So he was the guy in charge. And I didn't feel like I was doing a very good job on the air. And so I went to him and said, Carl, I just need a little, I could use a little help or some advice. And he looked at me and he said, well, you know, you're the first person at this station ever asked for that kind of help. Yeah, so he assigned Ken Ost. He assigned Ken Ost to listen, and Ken listened to a few shows and came and sat me down and said, well, here you're doing this, and you ought to be doing that, and gave me some wonderful advice. And it was almost immediate. In fact, people were saying, man, you sound a lot better. And I felt a lot better. And so I really – I had that sort of nurturing and help, you know, right from the start and throughout time. And then, of course, listeners have been absolutely wonderful. The mail that I get, and the when I meet people, I have a chance to meet people at listener events. Wasn't too long ago, I was in Milwaukee at we had a listener event at the Domes in Milwaukee, and a large group of people. Just the chance to sit and talk to them is wonderful, and oftentimes they will say, well, you know, I feel like I've known you, you know, like you're an old friend, and that makes me feel pretty good too.
Well, that's the phenomenon I was alluding to. I mean, it's true. You've achieved that. Way to go.
Well, people know. I mean, I don't mind talking about myself on the air, so people know that I'm a musky fisherman, and I'm, you know, got an 8-year-old daughter and a great wife, and I like to cook. And so, you know, people learn a lot about me over time, just like I learn a little bit about my listeners, some of them. You get to recognize voices, and so sometimes you can tell a lot about a listener just over time by the questions that they ask.
Sure.
I had a listener who was, I know, lived in a trailer house and homeschooled and had a child with asthma, and you know, on and on and on. And so I feel like I sometimes know a little bit about my listeners too.
I mean, it would be a waste of time to ask you what one experience, what one phone call stood out for you, Larry, all those years. I mean, you couldn't do it, obviously. Well, let's get to the subject at hand. It won't be long before you share an evening with Western Wisconsin WPR listeners.
And I'm looking forward to that.
We are as well. What can you tell us about the kinds of things that you'd like to communicate from an after-dinner podium? What does Larry Mueller talk about when he comes to visit?
Well, I tell you, I like to talk a little bit about the past. And I'm telling you, there are some things have happened to me over time on the air that are interesting and sometimes pretty funny. So I like to do a little talking about the past, and then kind of where I am and where the station and the network is right now. And then we usually take a little look into the future and talk about some of the cool things that we're going to be doing in the near future and then maybe in the distant future. So it's kind of a look back at where we were, or where I was at least, and where we are now and where we're going.
You can use the term we, because I think most people will relate with the things you've done and the places you've been, because we've gone there with you, I think, literally almost.
Yeah.
Well, here comes the big finish. You ready?
Okay.
Now, you won't do this forever, or who knows, maybe you will. We can't always live in a world of smartphones and Facebooks and digital dynamics. We do need burlap. We need dirty knees from working in the garden. We need moments when we literally, not just figuratively, stop to smell the roses, our roses. And that's what Larry Miller represents. So, Larry, thanks for keeping us happy, keeping us informed, and for keeping us in touch with smart people who, thanks to your hour and a half a day, feel like they're friends of ours.
Well, Al, it's my pleasure. It's great talking with you, and I hope to see. Am I going to see you?
I'm going to introduce you. I think I have that honor, so I'm looking forward to being there and shaking your hand.
Thanks, Al, and thanks to everybody for listening.
Now, here's the scoop on how you can join us at the WPR West Wisconsin Listeners Dinner. It's Thursday evening, April 26th. It's at the Holiday Inn in Eau Claire. All gets underway socially at 5:30. Buffet dinner. Wow, is there a menu, too? 6:30. Program begins about 7:15. You can register by phone. Here's the number, 839-2935. 839-2935. You can go online at www.wpr.org/Eau Claire. That's wpr.org/Eau Claire. Remember, the deadline is this coming Wednesday, the 18th. All right? So come and join us, meet a good guy, and the rest of us. It'll be fun. And like Larry said, thanks so much for listening. Larry Miller coming to town. I'll be there. I hope you will be too. Hey, big thanks to Grace Fair for promotional support here on Spectrum West. Here's a couple of memoranda. The 47th Annual Spring Art Show opens Sunday at the Heidi Center in Chippewa Falls. Tomorrow evening, it's a rockorama featuring favorites from the 50s and 60s at the Northern Lake Center for the Arts in Amory. Next Thursday, the 19th, UW Eau Claire Jazz Ensemble 2 presents their spring concert. There's a concert featuring the university's chamber orchestra at 7:30. On Tuesday evening, our friend Dr. Tulio Rondon, who will be featured on next week's program, directs that ensemble. And Tuesday's concert features three guest artists. April 19th, 6 p.m., Middle School Honors Choir presents a concert at the Shell Lake Arts Center. Info at shelllakeartcenter.org. My name is Al Ross. This is Spectrum West. See you next week for another edition here on Wisconsin Public Radio.